Well, we are now going to talk about a very technical subject. A highly technical subject. We're going to talk about the desire. The basic desire of the PC. We don't care whether this PC is characterized as a Thetan, as a body, as a Thetan plus body, as a reactive bank plus body plus Thetan, as a reactive bank plus body plus Thetan machinery. Whatever this combination, there is a certain desire present in Scientology which has not been articulated in the least, not been articulated in the structure of Scientology. And it would seem that this desire is the downfall and doom of a Thetan and of his various games. But it's not. It's only when the desire is unappeased that it is the downfall and doom of the Thetan. It was very peculiar that there should be a common denominator which is above survive. Since a Thetan will go through body death and his own forgettingness by which he approximates body death in order to achieve this desire. The entire background of Dianetics was dominated by the following maxim. The dynamic principle of existence is survive. The entire background of Scientology, like the kettle drums at the rear of the symphony orchestra, which are playing very low and constantly, and you wonder, what is that going on, but you don't quite articulate it in Scientology, is this peculiar and particular desire that a Thetan has. Survive is, in actuality, meaningless to a Thetan. One exceeds that immediately when he addresses a thing, a being, a livingness, which can do nothing else but survive. The unfortunate lot of the Thetan is that he is the postulator of time and is therefore living in a stream of postulates we call a time track of his own invention. And that's an interesting thing for somebody to do. So he has a game by which he postulates time and then he says the time is engulfing him. Well, that's a rather interesting thing, isn't it? If he unpostulated the existence of time, he would simply become static and there would be no time. And that would be that. But he gets together a concatenation of incidents of one kind or another by which he makes a postulate in agreement with other Thetans. And making this postulate, he makes a second postulate, and with the second postulate, he gets time. He does not get time with the first postulate. And tickety-tick, he starts to manufacture a time track in agreement with his fellows. Just how he manages the first liaison is not any of our business. But it is the point of assumption. Thetan, with no time, makes time. Now, the only spot that is rough there, and the only point of assumption which is difficult to assimilate, is how does he find a couple of other Thetans and say, boys, let's make time, in view of the fact he has no time in which to talk. No time in which to communicate. Now, early philosophy got around this very neat point by saying, looking at one another, we're buttered all over the universe, fellows. And we're actually part of a great big pool of something which disintegrates and blows up. And then we become individuals, whereas we're really not individuals. They speak of this as, one rather complicated description of it's called nirvana. One phrase that we have used in Scientology is a pool of theta. And by the way, all Thetans sooner or later, early on the track, have had pools of thought. They had a pool and they looked into it and mocked up things in it. And we're very prone to then talk about a pool of theta. All somebody's doing is demonstrating the nostalgia of a mocked up pool that he has. There is no pool of theta. There couldn't be a pool of theta for this excellent reason. There wouldn't be any time or space in which to make one or continue one, if we look at this original assumption. So how does a Thetan Joe and a Thetan Bill get together and say to each other, "Hiya, Joe, hiya, Bill. I tell you, fella, I tell you what let's do. Let's make a postulate. Let's make a postulate. We don't know anything about time." And they say, "Well, that's fine. All right. Now we don't know anything about time. Let's make a second postulate that we do know that we're talking to each other, and that our co-action as regards to our two universes, which we have now just dreamed up, shall hereinafter commingle and become a time track." There's just no such moments. There can't be any such moment. The reason there can't be any such moment is they couldn't have been in communication in the absence of time. So you see, the big not know is still there. Well, what is it? It's a don't know. It's about the fanciest don't know that any Thetan ever dreamed up. And if we all know the answer to this, we are very loath to recover the answer, because time tracks would start to fold up and the whole business of universes and everything else would go bluey. Nevertheless, it's possible for a Thetan to reassume this moment with modern processing. And as such, we are the boss of universes. Universes can perish at our whip crack. All we have to do is get a hold of Joe and Bill and say, "What got into you fellas?" And they say, "Huh? We don't know anything about it. We're just a couple of guys. We're just trying to get along and raise a family and do this and that." Only that's not what they're trying to do. They're doing something else. They have another desire. Now, this matter of survive is very interesting, because the whole entire definition of to survive depends upon time. And time is a fascinating thing. It is a postulate. So above the entirety of backdrop, you might say, in Dianetics, the Dianetic principle of the dynamic principle of existence is survive, lies the fact that one had to have a postulate to survive along a time track before he could assume survival. Therefore, he is the effect of his own cause. And in this word survive, we have the effect of one's own cause. And having the effect of one's own cause, one then has a reverse view of everything else, naturally. And so survive might very well embrace Dianetics, but does definitely not embrace Scientology. We're talking about something else besides survival. Survive is a dichotomy, actually. It is succumb. We can explain succumb in view of the fact that a Thetan cannot die, cannot do anything but go on being the effect of his own cause. We can say that succumb is a method of surviving. There being no rock bottom of extinction as far as a Thetan is concerned, then we can immediately assume that the succumb activity is an effort to get rid of an unsuccessful mock-up, which doesn't completely match the environment, and then build a successful mock-up which will fit the environment. And without the mechanism of death, one would never be able to jettison the mock-up. The dinosaur would still be walking around, embarrassed because he had eaten the tops off all the trees. The dinosaur had to go. The brontosaurus, the rest of them had to go because they devoured their food faster than their food could grow. They were too big. They lived too long. They were unwieldy. They got stuck in swamps and tar pits. And they had a fascinatingly lugubrious history. And if you were shepherding around a a brontosaurus mock-up, and you didn't have any further food, and the climatic conditions had changed, and you couldn't get a big enough overcoat, I'm very sure that you would say, well, now, let's see. What's the solution to this? And, of course, the solution to this is stop running that body around. Well, if you let go of the body and that mock-up and simply let it perambulate around without any guidance and so forth, and it didn't have any motive power or thinkingness of its own, you have another problem. If you made another mock-up, it sooner or later would run into this brontosaurus. Only the brontosaurus now is not rational. He's just sort of floundering like a wound-up toy. Obviously, the solution is get rid of this brontosaurus and mock up something like a chorus girl, or, you know, something more amenable to the environment as it progressed. I know that they did all this on a gradient scale, but it was not done in the absence of intent. If we said there was no intention whatsoever, there's no reason to have a brontosaurus, and it all happened by accident, then we're falling into a den of snakes known as science. And this den of snakes is very, very prone to believe that it was all mud, and there was an accidental, spontaneous mudation from which life stepped fully armed, and all because of an accident having to do with this and that. And then it developed the way it was going because it ran into too many trees or something. And, you know, I mean, this complete gibbering idiocy. We look at the principle of natural selection, and if we look at it as a scientist in the biological, physiological field and know nothing about any other field, this all sounds reasonable. Yes, yes, it sounds very reasonable. Actually, it's a theory which is very old. It's almost, oh, heavens, the theory is about 100 years old in its full-blown form, and is much, much older than that in its form. 7,000 years ago, I remember the Indian philosophy, Inja, had to do with the with mud. There was mud all mixed up in that one, too. Elephants and pillars and turtles and mud and, oh man. I think science is probably dramatizing a disagreement with this mud theory of India 7,000 years ago. But if a person who was only a physiological scientist and therefore a specialist of the highest order got himself into a close association with all these theories, they would seem reasonable to him unless he studied mathematics. And if he studied mathematics and became a good actuarial mathematician, he would see the fallacy of all this. The idea that an accidental, natural selection came about and evolved anything is giving energy and mass the ability to think, because no series of accidents could account for the complexity of one form. And we have ants and lice and politicians. We have all kinds of forms all over the place. And each one is distinct, and each one matches up its own species, and it's a fascinating picture. And actuarially, mathematically, a series of fortuitous accidents could not have occurred. It just couldn't have occurred to have made all these forms. There had to be some intent involved with the thing, too. The factor, by the way, is not a mild factor. It's about 100,000 to 1 against an accidental solution. There has to be some intent there. As soon as you subtract the intent, it becomes mathematically impossible for enough accidents to occur fortuitously to convince enough pieces of mud to form up in a similar pattern. We take 2 billion human beings on Earth today, and to say, well, it's all an accident that comes off the stream of protoplasm that a human being gets made every time that we see. I mean, it's... No, no. Evolution is an excellent principle, I'm sure, but has much to do with the situation. What it is a look at this principle of the gradient scale. And if you say gradient scale or data of comparable magnitude or something like that, and call this evolution, you see, from one datum, as I was telling you the other day, the Empire State Building down to a gnat, we can get a gradient scale like this, and we could then call this evolution, plotting these various changes against time. But that's not what evolution means. I'm not going to go into evolution now, but I call your attention to numerous textbooks which have been written on this subject and which start with an unreasonable assumption and then continue with unreasonabilities. No, there had to be intention where life forms were concerned. And this intention was always expressed in the direction of survive, even when the life forms died. And a method of survival is to get rid of the mock-up. Now, that's not a new idea with me at all. I mean, that's part and parcel of the old-time biologist. He used to remark on this before while he was still thinking, while he was still philosophizing. Natural history talks about this. But, therefore, succumb is an activity of survive. We'd have two survival activities then. These two survival activities would be to live or to die. Well, actually, a thetan is in a more interesting position. He can postulate himself out of the livingness of an identity. He can say, I am no longer this. And I no longer have any personal memory of this. That's what he can do. And that's an interesting thing, isn't it? I can forget all about this and pull off it, and therefore I am dead. But he's not dead. You get him to change his mind back the other way, and he's alive again. He's been alive all the time. He's saying this identity and this series of memories are dead. Well, why does he do that? Well, he wants a clean start. He wants a good, clean start and wants to make his mistakes all over again and have the fun of making them. This is his philosophy, and he's stuck with it. But he can actually undo these various philosophies. And it's quite curious. He can undo all these philosophies. If he wishes, he can undo all of his postulates and considerations, and he doesn't have to make a clean start of it at all. But, of course, he's probably very leery of finding himself all of a sudden in the position where he has to say, hey, Bill, let's make a postulate that there's time, without any cognizance of how he's going to get in touch with Bill if there is no space in which to locate anybody. The queasiness of non-location and so forth is liable to hit him one way or the other. So there's a never-never land of origin, which must be right here. It must be right here and now. And it isn't back on the time track or anywhere else. It just must be co-instantly existing. Because there is no time, except the postulate that there is time, made as the second postulate to the fact that they don't know anything about time. Must be, you see. Well, that tells you that there isn't anywhere to the origin point. And it must, again, be right here and right now in this instant. It is only by our considerations that we consider it could be 1,000 years ago or 1,000 years in the future, don't you? I mean, because then we're working off the second postulate again, and we're working as an effect of our own cause. And it's very difficult for us to understand ourselves when we ourselves are not the effect, but only pretending to be. You run a thetan very long, and a feeling of awful pretense starts to come off of him. The awful pretense of his problems, of his difficulties, of his illnesses and his pain, these things start to come off. And a horrible falsity sits in. Little kids run this. They've got a stick, and they're using it for a horse. And they're trying like mad to make that horse more real, more serious, more gallopish. And they have to work at it very hard because they basically know it's only a stick. But they have to say, I don't know that this is a stick. I do know it is a horse. And then they got a horse. And if they didn't have parents and so forth around to say, what are you doing with that old stick? Why, they'd probably achieve the creation of a new universe, which included the horse. But they don't do that because it's out of agreement. It is, after all, only a broomstick. You start to run this out of a child, and he gets this feeling of pretense, the feeling of play-like. It's a funny feeling. You get the same thing off of a Thetan who is forcing himself to be serious and in deadly earnest about a deadly, deadly serious earnest universe. You start blowing through that, and first, as he comes off the seriousness, this horrible feeling of pretense starts to engulf him sooner or later. I've been pretending all the time. That means I'm a fake. Now, he has developed, as a Thetan, a number of derogatories. A fake, a falsity. This fellow is not sincere. He is just a pretender. You see, all these things are insults. And if he can just keep these in the insult category, then he never drifts up into being, you see, a fake or a pretender, because he can say to himself, well, I don't want to be that thing. Because if he is that thing very long, he's liable to blow through and find himself in the position of having to say, well, Bill, not knowing where Bill is, there being nowhere for Bill to be, why don't you and I, there being no time in which to talk, make a postulate that we don't know anything about time. And they'll say, all right. He'll say, all right.
What's time?
See? Well, it's this tickety-tick thing that's going on while you and I are talking. And it's the action of that mock-up of yours with this mock-up of mine. Being careful to misidentify the mock-ups. So that mock-up of Bill's, Joe has claimed. And that mock-up of Joe's, Bill has claimed. So when he says that mock-up of yours, he's pointing to his own mock-up. And we get this nice, commingled, upside-down thing of where they now become the effect of their own postures, the effects of each other's mock-ups, and we've got a universe going. And they probably think they have to do that if they tore it all apart again. So they're very leery of tearing it apart, very leery. They sit and suffer, and they do all sorts of things to keep from doing this. But are they suffering? Well, as a matter of fact, they're suffering. That's very strange about the whole thing. Boy, can a Thetan make a postulate. When he sits down to suffer, he really suffers. Now, the mistake that he makes, or the mistake that anybody makes that's trying to understand this, is to fall into this insult category with regard to this pretense and say he's not really suffering, it's just in his mind. That is a public view of it, you know. Somebody is in agony. And some medico says, well, now that is a psychosomatic illness, and it's just in her mind. Oh, then she doesn't really feel it. She just thinks she does. You get the idea? Well, man's gone an awful long way off base. That's the only way you could have a car, to think you had one. To think there was a car there. To think that it wheeled. To think that one stayed in agreement with base time, this universe. Follow me? It's the only way you have a car. So to say, well, she isn't really suffering because it's all in her mind. It's something like saying you're really not eating watermelon because it's on the table and you've got a knife and fork in your hand and your mouth's full. That's a pretense. Well, this word pretense has an ugly connotation to it. And so the Thetans of this planet are very, very chary of ever getting themselves into a pretense category and prevent themselves from doing so by continuing to make it an insult and continuing to call anything which is of the mind or pretending or anything of this sort as bad. This is something you must avoid. You must never get into this kind of a category. And yet, ability depends to a very marked degree upon the ability to pretend. And a Thetan is practically dead if he can no longer mock up anything. But he can't imagine anything. Well, he can't have a universe either. So his task is to hold him in this narrow band, above which he will have no universe, and below which he'll have no universe. You got it? In that narrow band, he'll have a universe, and in that narrow band, he's got to suffer and eat watermelon and do all sorts of things. Now, he can be raised or lowered in the actuality or ability in that sphere. And what your preclear is trying to do is adjust himself. That's one of the things he's trying to do. He's trying to keep himself adjusted in that sphere. Enough reality so that it will all be real. You see? An insufficiency of reality so it won't hurt. And he's got to balance himself in there. Even psychiatry dramatizes this. Person gets too sane around psychiatry, they just absolutely quiver for that electric shock machine. Upsets them. They consider themselves the anointed. The anointed and the appointed. If anybody goes off the beam and starts to break his agreements with the physical universe, they consider that they are God's police, sent to punish the undoer. They're not, by the way. I was reading over some of God's appointments one day, and not one of them had anything to say about psychiatry. Not one of them. Now, the Thetan, then, is doing an interesting thing. He's living as the effect of his own cause. And this, as one of my friends said once, is the second law of magic. Never become the effect of your own cause. It's the second law of magic. Never. All right. This is such a solid law. What are we doing obeying it? In reverse. Of always being the effect of our own causes. Well, if we didn't, we wouldn't have any universe. So out of all of this potpourri, we take a spoonful of soup and look at it very carefully. We analyze it and gastricize it, and we discover that a Thetan has a desire senior to the desire of being nothing. There's a desire senior to the desire of being nothing. So I was talking to you about it. And that desire is a very odd one. It doesn't seem reasonable. And it seems that there are numerous things in controversy to it and with it. And that desire is to communicate. That's it. And it could be said that if there's anything wrong with a Thetan, it cannot communicate. That's all. So we can analyze and gastricize and romanticize and pretendicate and prefrontal dichotomy the Thetans of Earth and say that they think with their brains, and we can do fantastic things. We could have a man walk in this door this moment saying, I am the anointed. I have been appointed by the great Lord Yapamugagung, something, you know, to whirling dervish eyes, Earth, you're immediately join a cult and wear a green headcloth and so forth. We say, this guy's nuts. This guy is not just stark staring mad. He went past that point a long time ago and has been getting steadily worse. We say, he's aberrated. He's insane. We say, he has a misplaced idea as to how he will get our enthusiasms aroused to a point of cooperation. We could say all sorts of things about him. We could discuss his condition as serious. We could discuss his condition as a dearranged you know, the funny part about Kreplin's classifications are they're very neat classifications. These are the classifications of psychiatry, but they don't include any nutty states. This is really true. I mean, you look for actual insanities as you understand them and so forth, and you don't have them really classified. For instance, there's nothing in there to to describe the fellow who is nothing but a communication particle. The fellow who has been told by the fellow to do something. Of course, any sane state can become an insane state. Any sane state can become an insane state. That there should tip you off that there's something wrong with the whole subject of insanity. If all you do is exaggerate a sane state and get an insane state, why, there's something wrong with this. It can't be a subject there at all. But actually, there isn't much of a subject there, and the classifications are quite fascinating because they're missing in so many quarters. And the way you would make a psychiatric classification that would work, not Kreplin's, that German classification, by the way, can't be very satisfactory because every school of psychiatry that uses it takes hold of it and changes it all around and deletes it and then makes a whole new scale. And then, you know what they do? They put on at the bottom the same thing that Kreplin did, other classifications, having classified everything totally. And when people walk in, they always put them in other classifications and never put them on their scale. It's very funny. But there would be an insanity called missionoia, see? Or something, or mission meglia, or message particleosis, you know. And this fellow would be that. He would have gone insane. Each and all of us are really very unhappy unless we have something to say or represent or something to identify us one way or the other. We're not very happy unless we have this. Well, if we magnify this out of all proportion, well, of course, we get an insanity, and we get a messiah or something walking around saying, you must all wear green head claws, and I have just been anointed by Yapsabula or some such guy, and I am carrying the word. And somebody says, the word? And what's the word? Well, the word is Yagar-Pawa-Wagas-Yab-Yab-Yab-Yab. And they say, well, what's that mean? Ah, that's too secret to have any meaning. This is a kind of nuttiness which is very, very entertaining until the fellow begins to try to knock your head off or something of this sort. Actually, these fellows are quite mad. But it's quite a game. And it's quite a game, too. The only reason I'm mentioning it is because the psychiatrist needn't go to all this trouble to make a psychiatric classification. As I just said, all you have to do is classify each sane state and activity in which man is engaged and then exaggerate it. See, and just say he is fixated on this and unfixated on other things. And you've got the entire classification of insanities. You follow me now? I mean, you could then have this sort of a thing. You just unfix him on everything else and fix him on one or two of these conditions. You've got it. He'd be sane. Well, if this is the case, that'd make an awful lot of insane states, wouldn't it? Kreplin's classification be damned. I mean, if we wrote them all down in very small print on a scroll here, we'd be unrolling it for the next several hours. See? That'd be an awful lot of classifications. We could make an insanity out of almost anything. We notice that people occasionally shoot their cuffs. You know, they adjust their cuffs because their cufflinks are biting them or something of the sort. Or they realize that part of their cuffs are dirty and they want to get them out of sight. They shoot their cuffs for some reason or other. Well, we could have shoot the cuffosis. The trouble with the fellow is he shoots his cuffs all the time. So. See? He just keeps shooting your cuffs. That's an insanity, then, isn't it, huh? Well, now that we can understand that shooting your cuffs is not the total activity in life, is the only thing that makes us sane. That's the only reason you're sane, is you can understand that this is not the total activity in life. You get it now, so that we've covered the subject. We've covered the subject of insanity with great thoroughness. Now, you don't think we have, but, brother, we have. I mean, that is the most exhaustive coverage of the state of insanity you ever heard of. If you're ever in an institution looking around at the boys, you realize you're still sane if you can see that there are other things to do besides what they're doing. They can't see that there are other things to do. You got it? Guy, that's about the words. It's a very complicated subject. But, of course, if a couple of Thetans got together, called Dr. Joe and Dr. Bill, and they said, you know, it's awful dull around here. Let's make a postulate that we don't know anything about insanity. All right. Now, there is such a thing as insanity. Now let's classify it. See what would go on? They'd make a new universe called an insane universe, and they'd have an interesting game. And the more classifications, which are erroneous, that they would print, by the less they would know about it, but the more names and classifications they would have, don't you see? And they could make quite a universe out of this, believe me. They have. Dr. Joe and Dr. Bill, working entirely and completely in the field of the mind, have had a ball. But remember, it's a universe of this class. I don't know anything about insanity. Now let's learn about it, which means let's invent it. See how this could be, that you could build an entire universe of study and difficulty, one kind or another, and you could invent it in all different ways. Now, the fact that it is an invented universe is very much to the point, because people viewing this universe find it only confusing, and they don't find any real order in it. When you start out to study psychiatric text or something of this sort, you don't find it's an orderly text. And you would have an awful time with it if you didn't understand that it was an invented text. But if you understand it's an invented text, it never worries you. Similarly, if you understood completely that this was an invented universe, it would never worry you. What? Or would you have to surrender some of the deep and horrible seriousness of making that broomstick into a horse? It sort of you pays your postulate and you takes your chance. And it's only when Joe and Bill go out of agreement with one another that they become rather unhappy about it. And then Satan finding out all the time, he's saying to himself all the time, now, I wonder if I'm still in agreement with it all. And if I'm not, then I'd better adjust my postulates a bit here. Swing into it a little closer. Am I doing the optimum amount of suffering? Am I doing the optimum amount of dramatizing? Am I doing the optimum amount of worrying? There's no need to do any more than I am doing. But am I doing the optimum amount? How does he find out? By communication. It's the only way he ever finds out. Well, how are you feeling today? So I'll know how to feel. Get the idea? If he could never ask, then he can't know. And if he can't know, then there's a scarcity of universe. If you doubt this, just examine a case that the lights are going out on. You know, sonic, visio, other things are going on. And you will trace it immediately to this point. There wasn't anybody to ask. For a long period of time in that person's life, there was nobody to ask. And he became uncertain as to the existence of that universe. Now he doesn't know whether to look at it or not. Now that's a natural consequence. There's an unnatural consequence that goes along with it, which is very amusing. There's a natural consequence. There was nobody to ask. Now you're dealing with a center pin fundamental of existence. It's an agreement, a universe is, on a time continuum. It has to be an agreement on a time continuum. A fellow all by himself doesn't mock up a time continuum worth a nickel. You ever tried to play chess with yourself? Rushing around one side of the board, and you make a move, and then you say, well, now I don't know what the other player's going to do, and rush around the other side of the board, and say, I'm Joe, I'm Bill. Very unsatisfactory, unless you schizize yourself. Schizophrenia, by the way, is a very natural condition. People are always doing this. They find themselves by themselves for a moment, they start to play a game. You know, one side of the chessboard, the other side of the chessboard. I wonder what the Jinx Brothers really think about this. Now, if I just kind of put myself in the position of Jinx Brothers, I'll be over there. See? That's schizophrenia. A borning, somebody would say. It isn't a borning. It's only when the individual finds out he hasn't got any other game that he has to grab onto another universe and find a game in that universe, you see, which might be an aberrated universe or a sick universe or something, you know. And he can find a game in there because he finds out the sick people have time to talk or he's got some good reason for it. But he doesn't like to play game with himself. Now, when we say universe, we're saying basic time continuum. When we say universe, we say the basic time continuum of two or more thetans, in which then they can build game universes. Two or more thetans. We don't have time without two particles. Funny part of it is we don't have a universe without two thetans. As soon as we lose all other thetans in our vicinity, we don't get lonesome. We say, there's nobody to build a time track with, and our time track stops to that degree. We kind of aware of the fact that there are other thetans around and that we'll see somebody in an hour or something like that. We'll say, well, that's fine. If we're in a relaxed state of mind, you know, we're not bad off on this. We'll say, well, Bill will be over in an hour. We'll sit here and make some time, see, and I'll find out how he's making time. And he'll tell me how some other people he's talked to are making time. We'll keep this thing going, one way or another. We'll chit-chat. Well, one of the great oddities is that people don't like to wait. They don't like to be alone. Well, the funny part of it is the native state of the individual is being alone. You understand? The native state is being alone. So here is a thetan in contradiction with his native state. So he gets a universe. There's nothing bad about a universe. There's evidently more bad about not having a universe than is bad about having one. And probably both could be very bad, or both could be very good, we think. But we don't know any thetans who are busy not having a universe. One of the reasons we don't know about any thetans busy not having a universe is we're not in communication with them. Keep a universe there for you. Of course, you can talk to Bill and Joe, and they say, we've got a universe here in basic time continuum. It's going tickety-tock, and everything is going along fine, and your sonic and physio is off. This worries you. This is a horrible thing. There's more universe around, evidently, than you know about. You had the universe, and then it started going off. Why? You didn't keep it checked up. Now, all sorts of things will happen. If you don't communicate enough, or communication is absent, you start to mock up masses, which you hope will be alive, and make substitute universes, and you get rid of them when you think communication is possible, and to the degree that you think communication is possible. And that is the manifestation back of ridges, energy masses. So, got it? Get the mechanism? You start to mock one up. There's nobody around to say, hey, is there a universe here? And he says, yep, there's a universe here. In other words, you say, good morning, Mrs. Jones. And she says, good morning, Mr. Smith. A conversation that could be said to go on by this theoretical extrapolation. This is only theoretical, after all. What works, works, but what's theory is theory. And she's really saying, is there still a universe here, Mr. Jones? And he's saying, yes, there's still a universe here, Miss. But they're both cheerful, and they go off down the street. But after a while, they'll get to playing another game, maybe. Somebody says, there's a bad universe here, Mr. Jones. Oh, it's a real bad universe, Mrs. Smith. This is a curious thing. They start to do the darndest thing. They stop communicating, which is the one thing that will give them a universe, because they can see this universe is bad, and they know they can always make another one. A horrible self-confidence and conceit, isn't it? You always make another one so that you can always put one out. And a guy'll start putting the universe out just as nice as you please. By what? He stops communicating. Well, look, this universe isn't this map. It's simply an operable universe, just like any other universe. There are an awful lot of people in it. And just because people came around and told you how bad it was, there's no reason to stop communicating with regard to it. If you stop communicating with regard to it, you'll start mocking up the universe, and you wind up with all kinds of black mass and so forth, which are all saying it's impossible to communicate, and which are blocking you off one way or the other. Well, you have something to learn about all this. It's a very funny thing that a Thetan would have to have anything to learn at all. Well, I'll tell you why you want to learn it and why you don't want to recover it 100%. Because if you recovered it 100% and nobody told you about it, you wouldn't have any universe. It's very safe for me to tell you about this. It's very safe for you to process each other along these lines. Because we do it in agreement. Right? And it's very safe for this to happen. Secure. Then we can, from this point, adjust the brightness of universe required. The liveness of universe required. And instead of going at it on a hit-or-miss basis, we can rather systematically adjust the game so it's playable. Up to that time, we're in a random agreement, one way or the other. But if you yourself suddenly sat back and said, well, no universe, uh-oh, where's Joe? You get the idea? You'd say, no universe, I've just found this out. I'm just above all of these don't-know postulates. I'm all by myself. There's nobody to reach out and touch. Get the idea? There's nobody there. And right away, I would be up against a no space, no energy, no this, no that. But most particularly, no bill. There's no bill. There's no new time continuum. And Lord knows how long I would be in this ecstatic state of nirvana. So on. So a simple flip of consideration is something that a Thetan doesn't do. He has to work at it on a bit of a gradient scale. He's cautious. Why? Because his basic desire is to communicate. This is a great oddity. A great oddity. Actually, any way you looked at this, communication would be a downscale activity if you communicated with everything. And with the tickety-tick of the time track going by, you're going out of communication with every past moment. Unless you make a picture and keep it that way. Tickety-tick, tickety-tick, tickety-tick. There goes the time track. And it's saying, out of communication, out of communication, out of communication, out of communication. People are saying, oh, no. No, 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 no. They're the effect of their own cause. So they say, good morning, Mrs. Smith. Good morning, Mr. Jones. Is there a universe here, Mr. Smith? There's a universe here, Mrs. Jones. Idea. All right, then, it's very safe, then, to be processed. And it's not safe to change your own mind. We dramatize this by saying no self-auditing. There really isn't any reason why we shouldn't do self-auditing, except our universe will drift off of baseline. Processing no longer fits exactly on the basis. We've always got an oddity there, and we're sitting there. We can always say, is there a universe here? Well, then it's safe. I can then kind of change my mind a little bit. As long as I can reach out and touch you. So we used to have a lot of things, theories about what an auditor was doing and what an auditor wasn't doing. We used to have a lot of theories about this. Auditor was sitting there as a guard, an auditor was protecting somebody and so forth. Well, this just shows where we were operating on the tone scale as a subject. That's all. Let's be frank. And actually, nobody needs protection, be it from anything but this. And that would be suddenly no universe. The lights go out. The trees disappear. The room is entirely gone. Now, the anxiety for a universe is what brings people into their heads as the basic postulate. They want to get in there to make sure they get that much agreement. But they only come into their heads because they're hoping the body will say, there's a universe here, Mr. Thetan. See? So they play it in close. Real close. And if they're pretty sure a universe is there, they can play it well out. See? Communication. Scarcity of. Is the basic desire and the only real malady as far as insanity is concerned. This man who walks in and says he's the emissary of the great god Paddy Wuff Wuff and wants us all to wear green hoods. He's not crazy. Well, he is crazy. We can say one thing for sure about him. He wants more communication. And we can say that if he looks crazy to us, he hasn't had enough communication. We got it? He just hasn't had enough communication. Now, separateness as a process is a fascinating thing to observe in action, in its work. Because it keeps a person in communication, says you don't have to be that close to it, fella. And unlooking is a process that a Thetan doesn't like. Because it throws him out of agreement and therefore throws him downstep. Now, you should have learned this in the last couple of days. Somatics turned on, and yet you know very well if a person is processed well, somatics don't turn on. You must have done a superb job of auditing. Tells me that you guys are really good. You must be real good. Because nobody's spinning. Not that I couldn't have fished any of you out. But the point is that there was only a bit of antagonism and a few light somatics developed as a result of unlookingness. And if exteriorization is so valuable, and if it is the sole fact of exteriorization, then any one of you, 20 minutes on this process, would have exteriorized and dropped all the mass. Let me assure you of that. If what I say about wanting communication is in error, then you would have exteriorized on unlooking. If you felt you didn't want communication, if you feel that communication is bad, then you would have exteriorized at once on an unlooking process, because you would have unlooked from people, and then you would have unlooked from the environment a little bit more, you would have unlooked from a few more people, you would have unlooked from your feet, from your waist, from your ears, from your skull, and that would have been that. Out you'd have gone. And not one of you did that. Newly. Nobody did that. The funny part of it is that it's mechanically absolutely accurate. You can drop these masses by doing that. You can move ridges. It is the most violently effective process I've ever developed for ridding one of ridges. Violently effective. You can drop them. Bang, bang. That is entirely undigestible for a Thetan. Thetan wants nothing to do with it. Therefore, on this point alone, whether you notice this on running such a process as spot that person now and look, whether or not you got an effect from it, whether or not you maintain tone or raise tone or drop tone, that is not the make or break of it. This will not kill anybody. It's just the demonstration of the fact that there is always a scarcity of communication where there is an aberration, and we get the primary law of process. Where there is a mass, which is evidently undesirable, the undesirable thing about it is communication. And it is a substitute for actual communication. Where a person is shying away from horror, there is insufficient communication with horror. This tells you that at once. Sounds like an utterly idiotic statement to make. You know, it's something that you just wouldn't say. If a person is aberrated on any subject, there is an absence of communication, a scarcity of communication on the subject. Fantastically true. Where there's an aberration, there's a scarcity of communication. Where there's a mass, there's a scarcity of communication. Where a person is interiorized, there's a scarcity of communication. And so, two-way communication is what we're talking about. Where a person can't see, there's a scarcity of seeingness. You remedy eyeglasses, migraine headaches, insanity, anything you want, by remedying the scarcity of communication. And it's a scarcity of communication with living things and living beings and universes. When there's too much universe starts to go by the boards, an individual becomes very, very unhappy. And a person will exteriorize only if he feels he can better his communication by doing so, or if you have remedied his communication so that he doesn't feel as scarce anymore. And then he'll exteriorize. Because you lose communication when you back off from above. And if you can't lose that much communication, then you don't back off from a body. You can only lose a ridge when you have enough communication to back off from the ridge. Follow me? Exteriorizing from the body is a process of unlookingness. It is so effective that I can take the process and actually bang somebody out of his head and bang him into a complete hypnotic apathy. I can be so insistent and so ornery that he will do this. He would think he just better had, that's all. Persuade him to do it, and he exteriorizes downscale, way downscale. Feels very apathetic. You exteriorize somebody and he says, "Oh, no, I feel so sad. Life is so unhappy." See, go on back in your head. If he started to exteriorize and you stopped communicating with him ably, he would take this tone drop instantly because it's apparent to him that he's gone out of communication. So he says, "Don't want anything to do with that. Therefore, this is not the answer. This is not the answer. Exteriorization is not the answer. You get less communication when you exteriorize. I told this auditor about it, and the auditor didn't say, 'Okay, fine, gee whiz, my gosh, what do you know about that?' No, he just said, 'Yeah, that's fine,' and went on with the auditing command. Oh, so, boy, it cuts down communication. Or he didn't say a word. If he didn't say a word, the guy just bangs into his head. Yeah, he goes into complete apathy. The basic desire of a Thetan, then, could be said to be not to survive, but to communicate. If his desire is to communicate, then you can remedy anything with communication. Does his desire to communicate ever fold up? Nope. On anything that is wrong with him, he's not had enough communication with it. There's just never enough communication in any error. An inability to exteriorize itself is an insufficiency of communication. And the answer to this is simply communication and communication processes. However they are run, they add up to the same thing. Naturally, you have to have reality and affinity before you will consider the communication of communication. Thank you.